Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Today is an exciting day. We have a bona fide rugby league legend with us, talking to us today, and very excited to hear Ben's views on the world. Ben Eichen is a football great. He's been playing, he's probably born with a football, I reckon, because he played so much of it. He played first grade for three clubs, the Gold Coast Seagulls, of course, the North Sydney Bears, my favourite team, and my second favourite team as well, the mighty Brisbane Broncos. But not only that, Ben's a Queensland State of Origin player with 17 starts for Queensland and, of course, a couple of tests as well. Ben, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, Jesse.
Mate, that's a pretty impressive CV there, mate. I've never met anyone with a football pedigree like that before, so...
I have.
Yeah, I'm sure you've met a few, mate.
I'm good mates with a lot of blokes who've got better numbers than I have. In fact, I joke to them sometimes, if we ever go and do a public speaking engagement together, that I have to jump on Wikipedia and edit my numbers just so I can sort of respectfully stand on the same stage.
That's fabulous, mate. Well, even with that, mate, there's some pretty impressive numbers. I mean, I'm just curious, mate. You know, you must have been born with a footy in your hand, were you? You've been playing all your life? Did you start as a whippersnapper?
No, I started young, but it wasn't my first sport, rugby league. I started in AFL.
Really?
Actually, yeah, on the Gold Coast, I played for Palm Beach Currumbin.
Yep.
Which is a side, a proud club that's still in existence. I think Wayne Carey, the King, actually went and had a season for Palm Beach there.
Wow.
At one point after he'd retired from the AFL. And then after AFL, I got into hockey. So that was my winter sport of choice for a few years. And then in my last year of primary school at Currumbin State School, they started inter-school sport and they only gave us the two options. One was rugby league and the other one was netball.
So netball didn't get a look in then?
No, my hand was kind of forced, and it just so happened that that particular year, 1988, was the same year that the Gold Coast Giants, as they were back then, got introduced into the New South Wales Rugby League, and so too the Brisbane Broncos. So living in southeast Queensland on the Gold Coast, there was much excitement around rugby league. I had one season for the school. I went and joined the local footy club, the Tugan Seahawks, and never looked back. I played for, I think I was 11 then, and played right through to the age of 27. So I had much fun.
Mate, that's a fabulously long career. And, you know, clear, we'll get into the path that you took throughout all that, but, you know, from the age of 11 to 27, you know, that's 16 years of playing footy. And I guess, you know, in a way, mate, you've been really lucky to make a career out of something that you obviously truly love, and there's not many people I know that get to do that. So I think that's a really bloody good thing to be able to do, mate.
Yeah, I feel really lucky and honoured to have something that I love doing, that I was passionate about, turn into a career for me. And, of course, it doesn't matter what you do in life, whether you love what you do or not, you know, by the time you get into it and start to do it professionally, it has its hairs on it. There's things involved with being a professional athlete that make it tough. You know, there's a lot of public expectation. It's a high-risk career. It doesn't go for a long time. I was certainly one of those guys that got chopped down early in his career, you know, having retired at 27 off the back of three knee reconstructions on my left knee. Certainly made it difficult, but can I say, with all the broken bones and injuries and, you know, lost games and disappointing moments, I wouldn't have changed it for one moment. It was an opportunity for me to learn a lot about myself, set myself and my family up for a brighter future, and I can honestly say that all those wonderful lessons that I learned through my time as a professional rugby league player, I've been able to take into life after rugby league.
Yeah, that's a really key point. I'm super keen to drill down into that, which is fantastic. One of the things, though, because I did read up about your career in preparation for today, I tend to be a bit of a researcher, and, you know, the injuries that you mentioned just then, you know, they did cut your career short, and clearly that would have been, you know, quite heartbreaking in many ways. What I'm really interested to know, Ben, is, you know, when you deal with adversity like that, and you're literally thinking, well, this is the end of my footy career, what's next? I'm assuming you come to this kind of crossroads, a bit of a fork of the road. Firstly, I'm curious to ask, how did you deal with that adversity? What got you through that? And then when you got to that fork in the road, you know, what was the decision-making process that you went through?
Well, look, you certainly learn that life's not linear as we'd like it to be, you know, so today isn't always better than yesterday, and tomorrow isn't necessarily always going to be better than today. You have good years and bad years, and good months and bad months. You have good games and bad games, and you've just got to be able to adapt to both and take both in your stride. And I wouldn't have been able to articulate it that way back when I was playing because I was probably too young. But for some reason inside me, when the setback struck, particularly with my left knee and those three knee reconstructions, I started to get excitement about life after rugby league. So I didn't sort of wallow in self-pity. Now, that's not going to be the same for everybody. There's guys that I've played with that get really down in the mouth about injuries and handle it a different way. But for me, you know, probably started about the age of 24, you know, these major injury setbacks, my mind just started to think forward. And so I started to prepare for life after football. So while I'd like to sit here and tell you that it felt like some great big adversity at the time and I had to fight my way back on the field and there are all these wonderful lessons that I learnt from it, I really didn't. I just sort of adapted. And I think that's a skill that's kind of innate in me, and I'm glad I've got it because it means that I can sort of push my way through any setbacks that happen along the way. But I guess the downside of it is that I'm easily distracted. You know, I'm always looking sideways for the next challenge. It's just kind of who I am. But at the time, as I say, while from the outside looking in, it might have seemed like I was doing it really tough. It certainly wasn't the case for me personally.
Yeah, okay. So you know, you had that first knee injury, you know, when they started going a bit wonky about 24, you're saying. And I guess what I'm hearing you say is at that particular moment, you've had that presence of mind to go, well, hang on, there could be an issue here. I better start thinking about my post-footy career. And I guess that's when you started that mental process to, you know, plan for your next adventure.
That's right. And I just had to get busy learning because, you know, while there's a lot of character traits and behaviours that you pick up in life as a professional athlete, it certainly doesn't equip you with the knowledge to go on and do a trade or, you know, fill a role anywhere else except for perhaps coaching and media. And the media options weren't that readily available to me at the time that I was ready to retire. So I went and studied. I was doing some work experience at the Broncos. And for me, sales and marketing was kind of the area where I ended up. So I skilled myself up. And then by the time I realised it was time for me to move on, cut my ties with professional rugby league and the Brisbane Broncos, I had a couple of opportunities. And ever since then, I've kind of applied the same philosophy. I have been through a few different jobs. But the moment I get a sense that it's time for change or I start looking for a new challenge, I start that learning process over and know that if I'm any chance of kind of being the best that I can be in whatever role it is I take on, I've got to have the knowledge and the know-how to make sure I get it right.
Yeah, look, fabulous, mate. And, you know, clearly that's been a success. You know, we've seen your face on all sorts of media over the years and, you know, every time I turn on the footy, there you are, which is just fabulous. So clearly, you know, all that hard work and learning has paid off. I just want to go back to your early days for a moment, Ben. When you thought about playing football, obviously you started at 11 and, you know, you went your way through for 16 years. At what point did you kind of have the inkling that, you know, this is something that I'd like to do forever? Or did it just continue on playing one game to the next and it kind of evolved? Was there any master plan there or did it just evolve?
Not really. It came very late for me. And I had a moment in my last couple of years at high school where I actually went through high school pretty young. So I finished my first year of grade 12 at 16. Now, wow. I was lucky enough to get an OP that allowed me to go off and do a science degree, a health science, environmental science degree, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I'd locked that down. But going through high school young also meant that in my final year, I wasn't old enough, so to speak, to compete against the 17 and 18 year olds that were all vying for those Queensland and Australian schoolboys spots in my chosen sport, rugby league. So what I did was I made a decision to repeat grade 12, and instead of sort of focusing on the schoolwork like I'd done up until that point, I went back and chose a few easier subjects and really worked hard at my rugby league, and ended up making the Australian schoolboys side. But I wanted to have that 12 months in 1994 to figure out whether or not I had what it took to be a professional rugby league player. And come the end, you know, having made the Queensland and Australian schoolboys teams, I had the opportunity and offers from a couple of NRL clubs. So that's when I knew, only then, that, you know, this was a dream that could perhaps turn into reality. And of course, then it's, history will tell you, became really fast track for me, because my first year out of high school in 1995, I was selected to play in the Queensland State of Origin team. So by the time I kind of hit that point, the environmental science degree very much got put on the back burner.
Yeah. Now, mate, I read that you were 18 years and something like 83 days, the youngest ever player to play Origin. That's correct, right?
That's right.
Mate, that must have been, for a young bloke walking into that Queensland team, which were full of probably, you know, people that, well, certainly we all as spectators idolised, but you as a player, you would have certainly looked up to as well. What was it like walking into that dressing room for the first time?
It was surreal. It's the only way I can describe it. I'd like to sit here and properly recount how it felt and, you know, what I learned and, you know, the enormity of what I was going through. But for sort of 6 weeks, my head was just spinning. And I was 18 years of age. I didn't have the life experience, the emotional maturity to kind of properly handle what was going on, and I guess make a, what would you say, a contribution of any sort of profoundness, except to jump on the bus and go for the ride. I was playing off the bench. I was sort of, I think across the three games, I played the sum total of 25 or 30 minutes, you know, on the wing. So they were, Fatty Vorton was the coach back then. He was doing his best to make sure that I was getting on the field.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was that young and that inexperienced, but we were so short on numbers, they really had no other choice but to select someone like me. So truth be told, it was just sort of 6 to 8 weeks of just something that I'd never experienced up to that point in my life. So I just went for the ride, and what a ride it was. You know, we come into camp, as you rightly pointed out, I had some of the guys that I'd grown up watching on TV, idolising. I was rooming with Mark Coyne, and 8 weeks later, we'd won a State of Origin series 3-0 when just about everybody on the planet was saying we couldn't win one game. So, I mean, what a story.
Mate, that's a fabulous story. And, you know, what a, you know, for a young bloke of 18, what a massive shot of confidence that must have given you, because even though you'd had that year, that second year of year 12 to really put into your rugby league, and obviously there were NRL offers, to be thrust into that, or onto that, you know, enormous stage so early in your career, that's just absolutely breathtaking, really.
It was a spin out. If you can imagine yourself coming out of university, having done your degree, and being handed the keys to a highly successful dental practice, first year out of university, you're basically failing your way to success because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So everything for me was new. I'd not experienced before. And I was just lucky that I had good people around me at home. So I've got wonderful parents who've been hugely supportive that have pretty much allowed me to achieve everything that I have in life. I was at a good club with the Gold Coast Seagulls, with some guys, you know, in clubland that were contacting me, making sure I had my head right. And likewise, by the time I arrived in the State of Origin camp, as I've already mentioned, I was rooming with Mark Coyne. Fatty Vorton was the coach. He was fantastic. He's a bit of a joker on screen, but let me tell you, this is a very, very smart man that knew exactly what I was going to experience and how to sell it to me. When it comes to the ferocity of State of Origin football, and Choppy Close, Chris Choppy Close, who, you cutting me bleeds maroon, was the team manager that year. My father had actually moved him a couple of times on the Gold Coast. He stuck solid with me right the way through that first Origin series and every series thereafter. So it was important for me that I had those great people around me. That they ultimately allowed me not to bugger it up. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's fabulous, mate. And look, being part of, obviously you've been part of many teams over the years, Ben, you know, in club footy, rep footy, State of Origin, yeah, and the Australian team, of course. So, and not to mention, of course, your broadcasting teams that you currently work with and all that sort of stuff as well. One of the things I'd really love your perspective on is, you know, when you walk into a team, are there some teams that just feel like they've got a better vibe than others in terms of, you know, you can feel that this is a great team and we're really going to kick some goals here? Or is it just, you know, you've got to take it as it comes?
Over time, you get a sense of that. So you've got to be put in the pressure cooker environment to find out, you know, how functional you are as a unit, who owns up, who doesn't. But these are only things that can be learned by playing a number of games together. You'd like to think you can simulate that sort of stuff in the training environment, but it's really hard. I mean, that's why you'll probably hear all these stories about coaches taking their players off to these army camps, you know, for 3 and 5 days. So what they try and do is test them as a group, try and break them down, see who breaks, see who stays strong, see who the leaders are, see who the good worker bees are. And, you know, the really experienced coaches, they get a sense for that quicker than the younger coaches. But it can't be, I don't think it can be spotted in an instant. You can't walk into a business, at least I don't know a hell of a lot of people who can, and go, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. This is how long it's going to take to fix it. He needs to go, she can stay. It's just not how it happens. And anything rushed like that, I don't think is going to bring long-term success. And over my time involved with high-performance teams, be it in sport or business, you know, there's kind of three things that I land on that run common through all of them, and that is trust. You know, so you trust the person beside you can deliver and has got your back. Alignment, you know, so you're all on the same page, heading in the same direction, and certainty, you know, which is something that great leaders do well. They help people understand where they sit in the organisation, what their role is, and this is where we're heading and this is how we're going to do it. So trust, alignment and certainty. And as I say, it takes a bit of time to understand whether or not you've got the right team to deliver that mix.
Yeah, look, that's fabulous advice. And I'm sure anyone listening to the show today is going to, you know, be writing that down, trust, alignment and certainty, because that is just absolute wisdom that, you know, cuts through everything. And you know, you spoke about the great coaches identifying the leaders and the worker bees fairly quickly. In terms of some of the leaders that you've been, you know, fortunate enough to associate with in your footy career and your business career as well, is there anyone who comes to mind as someone who you think, wow, they were just, you know, one of the best of the best?
I think, look, there's plenty. Yeah. I've been involved in some great businesses, some great sporting teams, and more than anything, this is what I can say for great leaders, is that they're all authentic. Mm. You know, they're not pretending to be someone. It's not like they've, you know, read the leadership book and they've sort of borrowed, you know. Well, I've got no doubt that they've picked up some good habits, some good leadership traits along the way. At the end of the day, their person, you know, their character is authentic to them. And they don't, it's like they're really comfortable in their own skin. You know, I've been coached by Wayne Bennett, one of the greatest of all time. I've had a couple of CEOs that I would put somewhere up on the same level, but they all do it different. They all treat people differently. Mm-hmm. But at their core, there's a few things I think that they have in common, you know, like that they all care. Mm-hmm. You know, Wayne Bennett from the outside, and I love this story because it's so personal for me, together with my mother growing up, we didn't like Wayne Bennett because that was the bloke who sacked Wally Lewis and never smiled on TV. And you kind of get this feeling about Wayne that he's cold and calculating. You know, and people now know, having watched that Australian story and any number of interviews that he's done over the years, that that's not who he is at all. But – I think all the great leaders, be they players or CEOs or coaches or, you know, chairman of the board, they care. They care for their people. You know, they've got great empathy. And second to that, I think I've already mentioned this earlier on, is that they've got the knowledge and the know-how. You know, so it's all good and well to have visions and, you know, give great speeches and care for your people. But if you don't know how to take an organisation and the people that work in it forward because you don't have the know-how, well, then no one's going to be following.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that authenticity that you spoke of earlier, that really feeds into the trust thing as well. Because, you know, what's that famous saying that, you know, Australians can spot a phony a mile off? And,
yeah.
And it's true. And, you know, once you've not been true to yourself, it does tend to undermine the credibility and trust that you have in that leader. Just on Wayne Bennett, and I know clearly you have a relationship that extends into your personal life, which we won't go into too much, but... I just want to share one little quick story about Wayne Bennett that I experienced, and this is going to sound so trivial to you perhaps because you've had so many of them, but as you know, where I used to live in Brisbane, down at the local shops there, I was walking my kids home from school, and we needed to cross at the shops, and the pedestrian crossing was nowhere to be seen. And anyway, as I was walking across the crossing, I had school bags and one child in one arm. And on the other end of that child was my second child. And Wayne had walked out of the local barbershop. And, you know, Ben, you've met me. I'm quite a short guy. And Wayne's quite a tall guy. But what I noticed with Ben is he visibly changed his stride to bookend my other daughter as we crossed the road, which, you know, I've never forgotten it. And I don't know Wayne from a bar of soap, but it's something that has always just stuck with me. And I really appreciated that at the time. He seems like a really genuinely good guy.
He is, yeah. And the bigger question, and that is, what was he doing in the barber?
He's got no hair. Well, yeah. Mate, you go, you can make that joke, mate. I'll give that one to you to take home and share with him.
Thank you.
Mate, just I wanted to touch on a day in the life of a pro footballer. We spoke a bit about, you know, some of the things you've been through and all the rest of it, but what are some of the habits you get into? And you know, you mentioned that the know-how is not necessarily transferable into business because, you know, some of those skills will be, but some won't be. But those habits that you developed at a young age, developing, you know, as a footballer and then obviously into the club scene and then later into the State of Origin Australian teams and beyond, what would be some of those habits that do you think that a professional footballer would pick up that they might not necessarily realise they're picking up, but hold them in good stead as they go through?
Yeah, there's a few. I'd start with self-belief because the life of a professional sportsman is so public, so many people watching and having an opinion about who you are and what you do, not to mention the media and the slicing and dicing of what you do on the field that happens every other week of the footy season. Self-belief is key. And that can't be false, you know. I mean, you can't live in a fool's paradise, but you need to believe that what the coach has asked you to do, the challenge that lies in front of you, you're absolutely able to achieve it. Because if you don't, it's too tough a contest. It's too tough a competition to survive in. If you start second-guessing yourself. So, you know, when I rolled out of professional sport, the one thing I took with me was that just about anything I was asked to do, I would say, yes, I'll give it a crack, you know, because I was so used to building that armory of self-belief to get through the grind, the pressure and the expectation of the NRL season. The other thing that underpins everything you do as a professional athlete is hard work. It's so totally effort for reward. You can't take shortcuts. And I think in business, perhaps I've noticed that you can, and a lot of people do, but in sport, you just get found out. There's too many eyes. There's too many people watching. You've got multiple coaches. And again, competition too tough that if you are taking shortcuts, you will get found out. So you've got to build that habit of continued hard work. A willingness to learn and improve. You know, we always want to be better tomorrow than we are today. And that's the other thing that professional sport does really well is we're surrounded by mentors. And that's not something that business does all that well, which I know that you're hopeful to achieve through this podcast, is that the managers and leaders in business are generally focused on the doing of things and getting other people to do things. Whereas in professional sport, you get coached and mentored every week. You get feedback on what you did well and what you didn't do so well. And you've got this team of people helping you improve because the coach knows that he is no more than the sum total of the efforts of his players. You go a long way to find, you know, leaders and managers, senior executives in business that wholly embrace that philosophy. So for me, getting out of sport into business, what I learnt was the feedback loop was nowhere near as comprehensive. You know, most of the time in business, no news was good news. So I kind of had to generate wherever I went my own feedback loop. So I was continually asking questions about how I could be better because you don't get that sort of information. So they're probably the three things: self-belief, hard work, and a willingness to learn and improve.
Well, mate, they're fabulous lessons for life. And, you know, clearly, again, they've held you in good stead. Yeah, as you transitioned out of playing footy and into your other roles, you know, you, for a period of time, were one of the, I think you were a board member of the Cowboys up in North Queensland there. And, you know, was that, what sort of transition was that like? You spoke about the habits there that stood you in good stead throughout life in general. But what was it like stepping onto the other side, the corporate side, I suppose, of footy, if you will, or the business decision-making behind footy? How did that go?
It was fantastic. I loved it. You know, I'd had a fair bit of corporate experience by the time I'd jumped on the board at the Cowboys. But the thing I loved about my, you know, 2.5 years up there in North Queensland was being involved in that process of planning for success. You know, we had this conversation that started not long sort of before I arrived, but they were certainly getting it going, about who we wanted to be and how we were going to get there. And, you know, in broad terms, there was this kind of goal that we wanted to be the best rugby league club in the country. And if we weren't prepared to put that up as our goal, then what were we doing? Because that ultimately meant, you know, win a comp. So to go through that process with some very smart people, so figure out where we were, where we wanted to be and how we were going to get there, who we needed to take on the journey, how we engaged them, was something that I'll never forget. You know, it's a process that's now ingrained in me that I can not only take to the next organisation that I work for, but I can also apply it to my personal life, you know, and that is, you know, again, planning for success. Mm. Where am I now? Where do I want to be? And what do I need to do to get there?
Mate, that's just fabulous. And as you've gone through your career, clearly that's a theme that's running through. What's the next adventure for Ben Eichen, do you think?
I'm raising a family at the moment, as you know. Yeah. I've got a lovely wife and four kids who are all sort of hitting middle school, and they need me to be around and present, which is important to me. So at the moment, I'm just trying to strike my balance. I've got a wonderful job at Fox Sports. I host a show called NRL 360. Fox Sports are magnificent employees. I fly down from Brisbane, so they're very accommodating that way. So at present, all I really want to do is produce quality TV, so make NRL 360 the best show it can be. And when I'm not at work, just make sure I'm at home and ticking all the boxes. So that's about as exciting it gets for me at the moment, Jesse, which I must say is pretty fun.
It is fun, mate. And, you know, it's about, you know, success without fulfillment is probably a bit of failure in a sense, really, because, you know, that whole family life is so critical. As you were playing footy, were you aware, you know, I know you've probably had your kids post-footy or towards the end of your footy career. Were you aware of the competing demands of footy and your personal life at any point, or indeed your business demands and your personal life? And how did you manage those things?
Not so much rugby league. I mean, it's you get a lot of downtime as a professional rugby league player, which affords you a whole stack of time to spend with your family. I mean, by the time I retired, I only had the one son. I've now got two sons and two daughters. I guess the balancing act became more important for me when I pushed into corporate life. So I ended up in a couple of national sales roles in the construction industry, doing a lot of travel and doing my media commitments on the side, you know, so I could work sometimes up to sort of 50, 60 hours a week when you throw in the travel. And at some point something was going to give, and so I've just sort of scaled back now. I've been lucky enough not to have to work corporately anymore. I work for Fox Sports full time. It's a sort of 7 month a year gig. I get a lot of time off, so the balance has come just by virtue of the fact of the job that I do. And I'm absolutely certain that I'm in the tiniest of minorities when I look at my work schedule. But you know, for you to strike a balance, and this is the point I got to when I was working 50, 60 hours a week, it needs to be important to you.
Yeah.
You can't have half a crack at it. If you decide you want to spend more time with your family, then you almost, it sounds silly, but you almost need to diarize it. Otherwise, if you're not scheduling family the same way you're scheduling meetings or work commitments, then they end up becoming secondary. Because if your diary, if you allow your diary to be filled with work, it can happen real easily. And that's the thing I found out. So I had to make a really stern commitment that I was going to change. I was going to strike some sort of balance and then go after it with as much rigor as I did everything in my professional life.
Mate, that's a fabulous point. And any of the guys that I work with who are listening will know that that's the drum that I beat pretty loudly about scheduling family time in and making it part of your routine. It's so critical to take charge of your time. It's so easy, of course, for time to be frittered away on things that, you know, are not always of the highest importance in terms of your, you know, your highest values and whatnot. But just a little story, I did actually schedule some time in with Miranda, my wife, and I have learned the lesson, Ben. I learned that it is good to schedule the time with my wife. It's probably just not helpful for me to tell her that I have scheduled her at the time. It didn't go so well. But that's good. So yes, definitely.
Wife's got to be more than a diary entry, doesn't she, Jesse?
She really does, mate. And for my darling wife who might be listening tonight, yeah, that's fabulous. We'll get that sorted. But mate, I wanted to, as we're wrapping up our interview today, and firstly, thank you for taking the time to come and have a talk to us. Wanted to talk to you about one or two little things just outside of footy for a second. Just a bit of general info about Ben Eichen. Mate, if you were hosting a barbecue or a dinner party or getting a group of people around for a meal, who would be the half a dozen or so people that you'd like most to have around your table that you don't already get an opportunity to see on a day-to-day basis?
Wow, that's a big question. So dead or alive?
Yeah, dead or alive.
Okay. Well, I'm fascinated with religious history.
Yeah.
Fascinated. And so I'd have to say maybe Jesus Christ. Is that too big? Can I have him along?
You can have him along.
And I'm non-religious, but yeah. I would just love to know what was going on back then.
Yep.
Who else?
You can have his 12 apostles too if you like.
Yeah, rightio. I love, look, I'm a massive Richie Beno fan, and yeah, he's also leftist. I never got the chance to meet Richie, but I've been a great admirer of his work, and I'd love to sit down and say, listen, I'd love to have a career like yours. What were the things that you got right to have the career that you did? Love my golf. I am a golf tragic.
Oh, really?
So I would say it'd be a equal split between Greg Norman, Adam Scott, and Jason Day.
Yeah.
So they all count as one person, by the way. I'm not losing seats. They're all the three.
That's right. You can have as many seats as you like, mate.
And I also love my rugby league history. So I know and understand how much the game has given me, and that there was many people go before me that made the game as great as it was. So I'd have to go back to 1907, 1908 when the game was founded and invite along the great Dally Messenger.
Wow, that's cool.
So he was the key to rugby league in this country. And I know there's probably not a stack of rugby league fans out there, but if the people who set up rugby league in Australia don't sign Dally Messenger, then we're probably not having this conversation.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Is that a good list?
Mate, that's a great list. That's an interesting list. I'd love to hear the dinner conversation with that group of guys. That'd be really, really interesting. So quick question for you around that group of guys. You know, going back to your golf, that you said you're a golf tragic, you know, what do you play off these days, mate? How's the handicap going?
Yeah, I'm playing off nine. I have been lower, but I have been higher. I'll put it this way. The amount of golf I play, I should be much, much better. And I think if you go and ask most golfers around the world, they'd say exactly the same thing. No matter how good you get at golf, you always want to be better. Yeah. So it's my great frustration.
Yeah, it's an interesting. I'm always invited along to the golf course just to make everyone else look good, mate. So that's my role on the golf course. And another quick question for you, mate. If you had a favourite book, you know, you're allowed to take a handful of books, one or two books with you, wherever you go, what would they be? What books have moved you or inspired you most?
Look, again, I've a lover of religious history, so I've read a lot of books. I love the Tao Te Ching written by Lao Tzu, you know, which was the text that sort of underpinned Taoism. I love business literature, and my favourite business book is Good to Great by yep. Jim Collins.
Yeah, great book.
And something that I've read recently. I'll tell you what I read recently
yep.
that I could not put down. It was Vladimir Putin's biography.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't understand European politics or communist politics, and to look at Russia and the Soviet Union sort of through the life of Vladimir Putin was just eye-opening for me, and just goes to the point that there are so many different people around the world that see the world so differently
yeah.
from the way we do. It was, but, you know, there's some lessons in there on leadership of what to do and what not to do, but I found that intriguing. And I just got for Christmas, which I'm enjoying as well, the book that Paul Keating did with Kerry O'Brien.
Okay, nice.
It's fantastic.
Okay, well, I will have to duck out and get that. Let me. This is going to sound like a book club review, isn't it? But I'll have to tell you, mate, my favourite book in the last couple of weeks has been Teams of Teams by General Stanley McChrystal. It's a cracking read, and put that on your shopping list for your books, mate. It's an awesome read.
Absolutely.
Cool bananas. Ben, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show today. I really enjoyed having a conversation with you. And, mate, your story and your history, you know, your knowledge of the game is obviously outstanding. But what I've really enjoyed listening to, I think, more than anything, is those little nuggets that, you know, ring true for all of us. Not all of us, very few of us, play footy for a career, but everything you've spoken to us is so relevant and pertinent to life, mate. I really thank you for taking the time out of your day to come and speak to us. It's been great.
My pleasure, Jesse.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/podcast. And to discover how you can go large with your practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.